Can't you see them giving Puddleglum's speech to Jill, possibly?
They'd better not do that.
You know,
that.
I don't like that.
Actually, just started a new poll on the homepage.
Oh, really?
Asking, what's your favorite Narnia book? Really simple. It's funny, we haven't really done a poll or a podcast on our favorite books in general. We've talked about every other aspect. So I'm just going to spring it on you guys right now. What's your favorite Narnia book?
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
It's usually The Horse and His Boy.
Usually. So today it's The Horse and His Boy.
Yeah, sometimes it's Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And we talked about this actually. We're flipped. I'm Dawn Treader one and Horse and His Boy second.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm Glumpuddle.
I'm Twigs.
I'm Dot.
And welcome back to Talking Beasts. And yeah, there is a new poll on the every so often, every year or so, I like to do a poll just gauging what Narnia Weber's favorite Narnia book is. And so we're doing that again right now. So obviously we want to get as big of a sample as possible. So head over to the homepage at the top right corner. You'll see voting for your favorite book. And when maybe we can do a podcast on the results at some point. I don't know. Thinking out loud. We did get some fake news the other day.
I was skeptical of anything coming off of Reddit.
And it was a fairly legit looking press release, though, initially.
Yeah.
It's just I have noticed a sense in the forum of a little bit here and there of, this movie's not so much the forum, but the comments and Facebook and other places like, this movie's never going to come out. Why can't we get some real news? Why can't you get a release date? Are you guys starting to feel any sense of, I don't know, impatience? Like, okay, we have a director. Why can't we get on to the next phase?
Maybe a little. It's kind of, but the other thing is we've waited this long. What's a couple more weeks, months anyway? And I have no clue.
It's been several years, hasn't it?
I have no clue how fast it should move because I've never been on stuff this early. I think by the time I joined the forum, Voyage of Dawn Treader was either very close to filming or it already started filming. So,
yeah, like typically you would think if they announced a director, you'd think they'd have a release date, if not at the same time, very shortly after. Usually you've got, by the time you're ready to announce a director, you think they'd have a release date secured at that point too. So it does seem a little weird that they don't have a release date yet. So I do what you're saying. Like, yeah, it's been several years, but there's been a few false starts the past several months where it's been like, okay, now it's about to really happen. Like even when David McGee was hired a couple of years ago, it felt like, okay, now it's about to really happen. And
yeah,
then just radio silence for a couple of years. I know the original plan was, yeah, Gresham had hoped to get it released late next year, but I'm thinking that ship has probably sailed at this point for that to happen.
Yeah, that would seem like an aggressive shooting schedule.
Yes. So I'm hoping they're not trying to get it out late next year at this point, I would say. But we did get some real news, too, though. And what's cool is just because there's no release date doesn't mean there can't be debate and controversy. And this is where it feels like, okay, it's back. There is another Narnia movie back. It's because finally, and you know all about this, Dot, as the moderator of general movie discussion, I feel like we have the first of many, I'm sure, legitimate silver chair controversy where everyone's kind of taken aside and there's disagreement and there's, you know, me being on the right side and you guys being on the wrong side, you know, all the usual stuff that happens.
Ha, ha.
All the usual stuff that happens in a Narnia movie, you know? My impression is that I'm kind of the one saying the sky is falling and you guys insisting the sky is not quite falling yet.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The sky's not falling yet, but there's the potential for it to fall later.
Dot, do you have the article in front of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you go. So this was an interview with Hannah Magilla, I think it's how you say her name, TriStar president, was asked, interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter about the Silver Chair, well, among other things, really. And was basically asked why they decided to make The Silver Chair next, calling it the fourth book. That was refreshing to hear it called the fourth book, not the sixth book. But why don't you read her response, Dot?
Okay. She said, Disney made the first one, which was a wonderful movie. I don't think the world is necessarily ready for or asking for a remake of that film. Silver Chair is a perfect moment to rejoin the franchise because it introduces a new character, a young girl named Jill, going into Narnia for the first time. Thematically, the story of a young girl who is being bullied, but who has to find the courage to stand up, not just for herself, but ultimately all Narnians, has such strong positive messaging.
So my reaction was, you know, that she's saying that that's the theme of the book, or that's the theme of the story, that, like, boil it down to what's a two-sentence synopsis of The Silver Chair. You know, for her, it's about standing up for others and standing up for yourself and standing up to bullies, which, of course, echoes what director Joe Johnston said a couple months ago. And so I think, again, I think there are different sides of this. Dot, what's your reaction? Would you describe that as the main theme of The Silver Chair?
Well, my initial thought was she's not describing the theme of the book. She's describing what she thinks the selling point is. Part of the production studio, that's her biggest concern. That's probably her biggest concern.
Marketing?
Yes. And that bit about strong, positive messaging. She's concerned about how the audience will react to Jill. She wants to make sure everyone will be able to relate to Jill. It's not necessarily what she thinks the book is entirely about, but it's the easiest part of the book to sell.
So then you wouldn't necessarily get... So I guess to you, this isn't that big of a deal.
No, it's just really not. It just
doesn't necessarily... But the thing is, it echoes what the director said. It's very consistent with what Joe said, and obviously what Joe says about the film does carry a lot of weight. He's the one directing it.
Yeah, but he also said a lot of other things there too.
Well, he said a couple of things like, oh, it's about hope and working together and things that sounded kind of vague, but then he mentioned bullying and standing up to tyranny. Well, that seems a little more specific. So the fact that we've got the president, which this is good and bad, by the way, the president of the studio and the director seem like they're completely on the same page. At least I hope we won't have a situation like we had with Don Treader, where you had so many cooks in the kitchen. There was just no consensus, I think, on Don Treader on what movie we were making. That's why we had so many different screenwriters on Don Treader. It is cool that there seems like they do agree on what it's about. But I think I would agree with you, Dot, if Joe Johnston hadn't said almost the same thing just a couple months before.
Okay.
For me, that gives this added weight, and it makes it seem like, wow, this must really be a big part of the movie that everyone has agreed on and everyone's kind of rallying behind, because the president of the studio and the director seem like they're on the same page. So I think, I know it's so early, and you may be right. It may just be, oh, that's the part they want to push. That totally, and she is the president of TriStar, I agree, but I think this is something that we can, that if you don't like it, you should be concerned about, and I don't know if I like it. I just don't see that as what The Silver Chair is really being about. I mean, as like a couple sentence, as like a summary of The Silver Chair, how does that make you feel, Twigs?
Well,
about standing up for yourself, standing up for others? Is that what how The Silver Chair kind of, or even just the bullying aspect of it?
Is that the main theme of The Silver Chair? No, but is it an important part of The Silver Chair? Yes. It's a popular hot topic. You cannot go into a school without finding, like, somewhere they're talking about bullying and stopping bullying. And, you know, there's rules against it. There's laws against it. It's huge right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, if you want to try to sell a movie, talking about bullying is a way to do it. Does that mean it's going to be as large of a part in it as they are implying? I don't know, but...
Well, I guess let's assume for sake of argument that they are going to make, that's the central theme, that's a central through-line theme that, like, you know, runs through the entire story. Does that... And you tend to be more the purist of this group. Like, how does that make you feel to have that be what the story is really about?
It depends what they mean by bullying and how they do it. If they portray the relationship between Eustace and Jill as a bullying situation, I will not be happy, because that is not a... For one thing, Eustace got that out of his system in the last book, and Jill isn't a bully either.
Well, I guess if we talk about it being a theme, we're thinking of something that, if she says thematically, I tend to take that to mean it's an idea that's going to run through the entire movie, not just
right.
the bookends.
But is she talking about the bullying or the thematically the story of a young girl? And then that has such strong positive messaging. Because you should theoretically be able to take out that whole clause in the center. Because it's all referring back and modifying young girl.
True.
Grammar matters.
I'm just not sure what to think.
Well, so I guess it seems to me that, like, either way, her like quick, short version of what's the Silverchair really about, I would describe it as it's really about Jill learning trust, which manifests itself as learning to follow the signs, basically. To me, that's the essence of the book, following the signs, trusting Aslan, following the signs, trusting Aslan. That would, like, my short kind of one sentence summary of the Silverchair would be something like that.
Here's the thing, though.
Okay, give me the thing, Dot.
Well, all of Jill's motivation, all of her progression as a character comes back to her experience as a bullied child. It's why she's so afraid. It's why she has such a hard time trusting. So if the movie is about... How do I put this? If the movie is about the way Jill reacts because she was bullied and how she grows past that rather than just the various ways she's been bullied, I feel like you're almost saying the same thing as Miguel, just using different words.
Well, I think Rose Tree brought that up, something about, like it says, it's the story of a, again, Hannah said, by the way, Hannah's spelled the same forward and backwards, speaking of overanalyzing. I thought that was crucial to get that out.
Yes, but that is critical. We had to.
I mean, while we're analyzing the grammar, we might as well analyze, you know, words as well. So she says it's the story of a young girl who is being bullied, who has to find the courage to stand up. So she's saying that Jill has to find the courage to stand up. And I thought Rose Tree raised a question I'm going to pose to you guys, or I guess Dot, you're kind of championing this a little bit more. So at what point in the book does Jill do that? And maybe you could say, and you'd be fine to say, oh, she doesn't really do that, but I'm fine with them going that direction in the movie. And I'm not quite at the point, is this good or bad yet? I'm just saying I do think this is a different way to go. I don't think this is a short summary of the book, what she's describing here. I think they are going in a different direction.
Right.
So is there a point in the book where Jill learns courage and learns to stand up, or?
Well, there's that point towards the end. Church destroyed. Leia of the Green Kirtle is doing all the music, green whatever stuff.
Green mist.
Yes, that
smoke.
No,
sorry.
Not mist.
Sorry.
If
you're listening, filmmakers, I'm sorry. It was a joke. It was a joke. It was a joke.
Do not bring back the green mist.
Sorry, you were saying, Dot.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but she's the one who says, there's Aslan.
Yes, that
is
Jill.
She's the first one, yeah.
Yep.
That is the point where Jill stands up. She has learned to trust. She has followed the signs, sort of. They got the last one right.
Uh-huh.
That's the point where she stands up.
She certainly witnessed Rillian getting out of the chair and, oh, wow, it turned out okay. Following Aslan's signs was the way to go.
Yeah. It may not be the big climactic speech that hopefully Puddleglum will be delivering, but it is a very big defining character moment for Jill.
Huh.
He's nodding his head a lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking...
Well, I've been kind of...
Twigs, what do you think?
Thinking about... Well, Jill has absolutely no problem whatsoever standing up to Eustace. For whatever reason,
right.
She is fine with that. She will stand up for herself against Puddleglum. They don't always make the right choices. But then also, I don't remember exactly what, but she... She doesn't have any problems telling the prince either what she thinks of him. And when you think about it, that could be a little bit of a first step of kind of, because, I mean, the prince has a power, or the Black Knight, or whatever you want to call him,
uh-huh.
has the power to lock them up for the night. I mean, they're only uh-huh. in there as his guests.
Right.
And they don't seem to have Jill and Eustace do not seem to have any problem telling him exactly what they think. Mm-hmm. So she's starting there.
I'm William O'Flaherty. This is the C.S. Lewis Minute. Can you believe there was a time when C.S. Lewis wasn't well known as the author of The Chronicles of Narnia? Back in 1949, a year before the first Narnia book, Chad Walsh published C.S. Lewis, Apostle to the Skeptics. Even though Lewis had written six other fictional works by this date, he was more known as a defender of Christianity and one who could persuade others to believe it. In 21 short chapters, C.S. Lewis, Apostle to the Skeptics, provides an interesting picture of a man just a year prior to the release of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Learn more about C.S. Lewis by visiting my website, EssentialCSLewis.com.
So, although both of you have like valid, those are good, all good observations, and I see where you're coming from, I still don't see that as you ask me to describe the silver chair in a sentence. What's it about? I just still don't see it standing up for yourself and standing up for others. I see it as, it's about trust and following the signs. And I guess to tell me, Dot, I guess what you're trying to say is that this is more of the blurry kind of the more sexy marketing way of saying that. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. How do you sell follow the signs?
Well, I think it sounds like a cool tagline.
I mean, it sounds like a really cool tagline, but we're not at the point of taglines yet.
Right. Uh-huh. That is true. And of course, her being the president, that's her primary interest is selling the film at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if other people, like if Johnston was making more comments about the bullying, or if Gresham started talking about the bullying, that would make me go, okay, they're going to really focus on that.
Okay.
But right now, it seems to all be marketing.
So if they were going to really focus on it, if you got the sense that that really was the beginning, middle, end kind of through line, if you really got the sense that that's what the movie's about, would that start to concern you? Because it sounds like you're saying you don't think they're going to do that. You think they're just trying to sell the movie at this point.
I guess it would depend on how they do it. Because like if they did some weird hokey thing where like the Lady of the Green Kirtle transforms to look like her bullies, that uh-huh. would be, that, yeah. that would just be crossing the line. That would be too much.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, it's if they write it well, it could be a very good theme.
You could, if you look at the beginning of the book, we have Jill crying because the bullies have been awful to her. Then you jump right to the end of the book. The two bookends are about bullying.
The bullies.
At the beginning, mm-hmm. she is not standing up for herself. She's being dominated by them. And at the end, she's dominating. So if you stretch it and you look at the beginning and the end.
Well, because she has a sword or whatever she has. At the
she
end.
Has a riding crop, I believe.
That sounds right, yeah.
But I'm not saying that they're right, the bullying is the main theme. I'm saying that if you stretch it, you can kind of say that it is a theme. And at this point, I'm not sure if she's talking about the story being, if she's saying, I don't know if she's saying that the bullying part is the main theme, or if she's just using that to describe what Jill is and how Jill grows.
I guess I would assume she's basically describing Jill's character arc and saying that that's basically what this movie is about.
Right.
It's about Jill learning to stand up for herself, you know, that's her character arc. That's how I see it. And I see what you're saying, but obviously the story is bookended with bullies, but I don't see that as a theme. I see the bullies are part of at the beginning of the book, the parallel I see between where Narnia is at the beginning of the book and where Experiment House is at the beginning of the book is despair. They're both in like an Experiment House. It's the beginning of the term and it's just completely hopeless, you know, that obviously Jill and Scrub are at the bottom of the food chain here. And, you know, it's just long, long term where no one's going to help them. Not even the head will help them. And remember, Lewis wrote that book or the essay, My First School, where he talked about how much he related to, oh, can't wait for the term to end. He talked about that a lot. And I so relate to that, too. Gosh, I'm so glad I'm out of school. No offense, Twigs, you being and you being a teacher, but so I see that the bullying as just something that creates that sense of despair. I don't see that as the standing up to bullies as being a theme in the story. And just as the way Narnia is ultimately restored to hope at the end, I think the rather absurd and yet awesome scene at the end when they come in and fix Experiment House is, oh yeah, now hope has been restored here as well. That's the parallel I see.
Right. Well, the first thing Johnston mentioned was hope.
He did say the word hope. And again, and maybe that's the one where it's funny. I think you're interpreting what Hannah's saying here. I'm saying Hannah because I can't say your last name as well. Megilla, I guess. But you're kind of looking at this as like, oh, she's just doing a generic movie marketing thing. We shouldn't read too much into it. And that's kind of how I view Johnston saying hope. To me, that's like, yeah, every fantasy movie is about hope one way or another.
Right.
Like, yeah, characters all hope for things. They hope to win. They hope to survive. They hope for second breakfast, whatever, you know, fantasy characters want. So I think we're totally reversed on that one, where you're kind of giving a lot of weight to him saying hope, and I'm just like, nah, that just sounds like generic movie marketing talk.
Maybe. It could
but
be.
But of course, yeah, but both of us could be wrong. And obviously.
At least for me, at this point, it's, I don't feel I have enough information yet. It all seems very kind of off the cuff. They didn't rehearse their answers ahead of time necessarily.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I think she typed her answers here. My guess is someone like Hannah probably did carefully think about her answers. I don't know for sure though.
Well,
my
then
guess
she
is
would
that
have
she
come up with a better sentence, in my opinion. Because that is
oh, the grammar police don't like the president of TriStar.
I didn't say I didn't like her. I said I don't like her grammar. There's a difference.
Oh, that's awesome. This is a whole new level of overanalysis. I love it. Let's take it even further if we can.
Okay.
We're going to eat ourselves alive if we don't get news soon. That's what the film, like real news, that's what the filmmaker should take from this. We'll just analyze everything.
That sounds about right.
I love you guys. I really do.
I mean, I'm sure when we get closer to it, I'll be much more into the negative and stuff. I just don't feel I have enough information yet to feel really strongly one way or the other.
Well, let me make up some fake news for you to react to then. Although that's based on something people are actually worried about. So because maybe because a few people in the forum have, I think Rose Tree and a couple other people expressed this concern. I think it's maybe Starcat that brought it up or Fantasia Kitty. I can't remember who it was. But I think we would all agree it's good that she's talking about Jill as the main character and the story is mainly about her. That's one thing I think we can all agree on is a good thing about what Hannah's saying here.
Yep.
But the what? Not so much. But we agree
that she's the
main character.
Yeah, but I still don't think that we should discount Eustace, because he was in Narnia before, but he also, I mean, he and Jill a lot of the times are making the same choices.
But you've been going through the reading group, and so you know that it's almost completely from Jill's perspective. Even the things that Scrub does, we kind of see it through Jill's eyes. When Jill falls down into the pit, when they're outside the city in the snow, we see, oh, she could barely hear the others, and we get it from her perspective, you know, for example. So she is the main character.
Yeah, but I still think...
And she has more of an...
I still think Eustace...
More of a... God.
Has a lot to learn, too,
but
in
just
the
if
book.
Right, like, you know, obviously this is just one sentence. Like, what she's saying is not, this is the entire script, but it's just, if you had one sentence to describe the Silver Chair, I think you would say it's about Jill. That doesn't mean it's not about anything else, but that's the... I think that's fair to say in one sentence. Yeah, it's basically about Jill. But I think I see what you're, tell me if I'm wrong, what your fear is, Twigs, a little bit, is that it's like, okay, I guess, but you don't want, you know, to focus on Jill at the expense of other things.
Right.
And I know one thing that people, I think that is one thing StarCat brought up, is the idea of Hollywood has a tendency to fixate on one theme, which I would argue, generally speaking, works better in a movie than it does in a book. A book is a great place to go off on little tangents and explore a bunch of things without derailing the story. But a film, just because of the very nature of what it is, tends to work better when you kind of have one idea that you develop and develop and develop. There are some of those people that are worried that if you focus too much on this idea of Jill standing up for herself, that you're going to miss out on other things. For example, what if they, if you want to make the climax of the story all about Jill learning something and all about Jill standing up to tyranny, can't you see them giving Puddleglum's speech to Jill, possibly?
They'd better not do that.
I think that's the concern, that putting all the emphasis on Jill standing up and
where does that lead?
I can
see where some of that concern would be. It's just Puddleglum's speech, it sounds like Puddleglum. You would have to reword it a lot to make it sound natural if Jill was delivering it.
Well, obviously, but just the idea of her being the one. Let's not get into the weeds too much. We're already in the weeds.
What are you talking about?
Okay. Well, my point is that maybe not necessarily the exact words, but the idea of her standing up and saying, "No, I'm going to stand by Aslan, even if there isn't any Aslan." Whatever the exact words are, she would essentially be the one to give the effective Puddleglum speech. They probably would have to rewrite it, of course, but that idea, just as a fan of the book and obviously a fan of Puddleglum, just completely offends me. How about you guys?
That I can agree with you on.
I don't like that. No.
So, okay, we're all good on that one.
She gets her moment before his speech.
Yes, she does.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't know Aslan well enough to give that any part of that speech. She doesn't know Narnia well enough. She's barely been in Narnia. I would say a large part of that scene is that Puddleglum is more experienced than the children. He can see through things better than they can. Throughout the book, he's been their spiritual guide as well as their physical guide, helping them find the way.
Uh-huh.
Not always perfect at it, but he's been there when they needed him most. And it would really hurt that scene if they give any part of that speech to Jill.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, as a huge fan of Puddleglum, one of the reasons I love the speech is I think it takes a thing about Puddleglum that maybe the kids have been giving him a hard time about, or maybe as readers, maybe we've been giving him a hard time about too, his tendency to kind of assume the worst initially. But he also tries to put a bold face on things. And that's what he does here. Let me assume that the Lady of the Green Kirtle is correct. And then I'm going to put a bold face on it. And suddenly it takes that thing we've kind of been, that maybe it's kind of made him sort of a source of humor, and maybe Puddleglum, he's such a downer. And all of a sudden, that's what makes him the hero of the book. The fact that he looks at things in the worst. Okay, maybe you're right, Lady of the Green Kirtle, but I would still stand by Aslan, even if there isn't any Aslan. And all of a sudden, he's the hero because of it. And I love that. I think Puddleglum is a much more nuanced character than he gets credit for. He's much more than just an Eeyore. And that's such a great moment for him. But there's concern that they're going to make it all about Jill, kind of like they did with Lord of the Rings. They gave a lot of things to Frodo that he didn't get to do in the book because they wanted to make it very Frodo-y. Oh, it's all about Frodo.
Disagree there.
Don't get me started on Lord of the Rings.
That's another conversation entirely.
Well, everything. Everything we talk about could be a complete other conversation entirely. But you're right. We got to stop somewhere. But I think that's a lot of the concern going on in the forum. Among those that are kind of leaning towards me of, oh, this sounds concerning, there's some that are more on Narnie Weber impending doom side. Impending doom, it's kind of ironic. Impending doom has actually been more like impending hope, kind of leading the charge on, oh, I think this actually sounds encouraging. I definitely think this sounds like, and sort of sum it up, it sounds like a different direction from the book, but it could just be there. It's just marketing. It just sounds good to say right now. And kind of the idea of trust and following the signs, that's a little more difficult to capture in one sentence and make it sound exciting. So you could be right. Maybe it could just be I'm being overly sensitive because this just kind of sounds like a Don Treader kind of thing, kind of a don't run from who you are, kind of simple, cheesy Hollywood believe in yourself kind of thing.
Yeah.
It may not be that. It's just that's the way it kind of hits me.
Right.
And since at the moment, because of it, the way like Joe talking about trilogy, and of course, even look at a lot of Joe's past films, this, in my mind, and I know that I got challenged on this in the forum, but I kind of feel like they're going the blockbustery franchise direction with this movie. I kind of hope they're not. So that's kind of the filter I read everything through right now. And so I can immediately imagine this being really hokey and cheesy and believe in yourself and blah, blah, blah. So
right.
It could just be I'm being overly sensitive to it.
Well, you've said multiple times you think Silverchair could now be a good movie, but not a great movie. Okay, what do you think a great movie is?
A great movie? It's a great question. I've said a few times that I have, the past couple months, I felt pretty confident that Silverchair will be a good movie, but not a great one. A great one will be one that I think is very character-focused, and it's not afraid to, me basically asking, what Silverchair movie would I make? A great film, character-driven, doesn't try to save the world, is not afraid to slow down and enjoy a sense of atmosphere, which Lewis does in the book, like with Bism and the way an environment feels, and let's just exist somewhere and let's not be in such a hurry to get on with the story. We can have slower paced scenes. We can have dialogue based scenes and not worry about the 5-year-olds getting, getting bored.
Okay. So I think that, so what's an example of a great movie?
A great, my favorite movie is 2001: A Space Odyssey. That I don't think that has a ton in common with The Silver Chair, but it is a movie about, it's very, I wouldn't say slowly paced. It's very deliberately paced. It takes a theme and it's not afraid to unpack it. It's not trying to make things more exciting. It's just taking the story. I am rambling. I do worry, especially with Joe being a director, that this movie will try to make cool stuff for the trailers, make cool battle scenes and explosions and the big dramatic lines where Jill's like, "No, Lady of the Green Kirtle, we will not back down," or something like that. That's the fear I think now, is that they're trying to make a movie that will appeal to everyone.
And will then appeal to probably no one.
Maybe.
Or very few.
Well, it's a fine line to walk, because they got to make enough money to make the next one.
But I'm not going to see any of that money. why should, if they make more money, I just want a good adaptation of the book and I want a good movie. I'm not concerned about them making money, to be honest. So if it's a great movie and a great adaptation, I love it. I hope it does well. But if
it's not, but then we won't see the horse and his boy.
Well, I don't want to see a bad horse in his boy movie, do I?
Okay, fair enough.
But anyway, great question. What do you think is a great movie?
Oh, goodness.
Put you on the spot right back.
Yes, you did.
I'll be putting you on the spot with a trivia question shortly.
Oh, no. The one that's on my mind is Spirited Away, which is an excellent, wonderful animated film.
Oh, that's the, that's not anime. What's the correct term?
It's animated.
It is animated, though. Okay. Yeah. And it was made in Japan. That is a great movie.
Yeah. Some of the same ideas you've got. Character-driven, deliberately paced, not necessarily a save-the-world story.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that movie, so.
How about you, Twigs? What's a great movie?
I was hoping you'd forget about me.
Oh, that's okay. So you recently, by the way, we talked about Wonder Woman a couple podcasts ago and you just saw it. Did you like Wonder Woman?
I did, for the most part. I mean, I liked the character Wonder Woman a lot. I love the actress that played her. I thought she did a really great job. It got a little too violent for me at times, too dark.
Yeah, we've been slowly introducing Twigs to superhero movies, and you've now seen Captain America, because of Joe, of course, and Wonder Woman, and then recently Superman.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll get... And if anyone has any recommendations on what superhero movie Twigs should watch next, because we've been debating that one, go ahead and post in the comments. He basically hasn't seen any, so how do you introduce the superhero movie to Twigs, basically. Where do we start?
Have you seen The Winter Soldier yet?
No.
That seems the natural progression there, since you saw first Captain America.
That's Ryadian's view on it.
Yes. So if you have an opinion on which superhero movie Twig should watch next, post a comment below. But enough of that. Let's dump in our new Weber.
Oh, no.
Dot, I don't think I've asked you before, have I?
No, you have not.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a trivia question. You can try to answer it, or you can blow Queen Susan's horn and get some help. And we're not doing the point system anymore. You're just playing for pride at this point.
Okay.
So, Dot, are you ready?
Sure.
All right. This question was submitted by Fire Fairy. So, who said this line? Queen Susan is more like an ordinary grown-up lady. She doesn't ride to wars, though she is an excellent archer. Who said that?
See, I think I know. I just don't want to blurt out the wrong name.
The line, once again, who said, Queen Susan is more like an ordinary grown-up lady. She doesn't ride to wars, though she is an excellent archer. Who said that?
Oh, well, that'd be Corrin, wouldn't it?
Well, is that your final answer?
Yes.
You got it. Okay. Oh. Just wanted to make sure you got it right. Yes, it was Corrin. I guess that was, he's talking to Shasta, as I recall, just before.
I get their names mixed up sometimes. Boren, Corrin. Those Arkanlanders. Well,
I just keep thinking of Shasta as Shasta and forget about that he's Cor.
Yeah.
Right. All right, well, thank you guys. Hopefully we'll get some real news as opposed to the fake news we got a couple days ago.
Oh, goodness, yes, please.
That would be nice, but I'm sure we'll find something to overanalyze either way.